Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Playhouse for this April 27th, 2025, session 62-ish, probably somewhere around
there. I think you're right. Yeah, it's 62.
Your host and program director here, James J. Maloff, along with my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habhager. Seth, the mics are on. Let's roll.
Yes, it is time. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, we have an audience here today.
We've got a great audience. Great audience.
So we are going to be speaking with someone today that is actually somewhat responsible for James and I meeting each other. In fact, very much responsible for James and I meeting each other, leading us to, well, all the stuff that happens here at the radio station today. So
I am so sorry.
So we have a very special guest today.
Yeah, we want to welcome to the WFHR stage from Central Wisconsin Community Theater, local treasure, actor, director, creative, Susan Engren.
Well, thank you, sirs.
Mm-hmm.
Sirs.
We have an eternal thanks to Susan. We have no journalistic integrity with this woman.
not at all.
We just value and appreciate her way before anything involving Seth and I. You know, you and I'll extend this to your family, have put so much into our communities artistically and just which, well, whether you're creative or not out there, you definitely pay taxes. You definitely have something to do.
And we do.
The Edgar have affected the economy in this area. Mm-hmm. So this is something that no matter who's listening or what, I think you can value and appreciate the impact that families like yours make in this area. You're one of many, but we want to note this one in particular because of the decades that you guys have been doing this around here and how much we appreciate it. And certainly along the things that Seth said there about personally between us and everything.
Yeah.
We're here to talk about Don Quixote de la Mancha, A Night to Remember.
I might groan.
I love it. I'm going to do it as much as I can. So, this is premiering May 8th through the 11th over at over in Stevens Point at 2952 Minnesota Avenue in Stevens Point, right there.
At the Century. Yeah,
right there
Century
at the Century
Building Theater.
Susan, before we dive too much into rehearsals or the cast or anything like that, can you tell us a little bit about the play?
Yeah, sure. David Barrowford is the playwright. He is currently living in Seattle, Washington. This is actually going to be the Wisconsin premiere. I think this is only maybe the fourth production that's been done of this play, so it's fairly new. It's a way it handles, especially if you're 65 and over, it handles some questions and subjects that are always on our minds, you know, which are our minds. Mm-hmm. And do we have them or are they going? It takes place in the center is basically a hospice house, privately run, for patients who are either suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. They're not going to get better. They don't have families that can take care of them, so they are here, you know, in this home. And Don Quintero is the newest resident, and he's not happy about it. He's not happy being there at all. His home is gone. He lost his wife 2 years ago that he just, you know, adored and doted on and depended on, and his memories are going. You know, sometimes he doesn't even recognize his son or where he is. So it's a very scary thing. And so as he's trying to learn to cope, a young night nurse named Sandy Cho gives him an idea. She's trying to get him involved, and they're going to have a Halloween, you know, costume party coming up in a couple of days. So how would you like to be, you know, and she's talking to him, and he likes stories of knights of all kinds. And so she makes him a knight costume out of a catcher's vest thing.
Cool.
Chest protector. And helmet. An old-fashioned one, not these huge things.
Right,
we tried that in props. That didn't work.
I imagine. Yeah,
no.
Got it too,
but old-fashioned. She wraps them in tin foil. And when he wears these, he just suddenly decides to take on the persona of Don Quixote.
Huh.
And that persona brings him out. And he starts making friends, and he starts helping people. But just as in the real, you know, Don Quixote, it can get dangerous, mm-hmm. especially for himself.
Right.
Or even sometimes others. Yeah. And so the staff and his son all have the big question of, do they let this go on or don't they? What's going to happen if we do? What's going to happen if we don't? Yeah. You know, and that's the play.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen the play, but I've read some of the script. It's mm-hmm. such good writing. It's such good writing. It's especially in this day and age, I don't think you need 6 degrees of separation from anybody that knows the topics we're talking about with dementia, right. Alzheimer's, or right. even just the fear of them.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think every human being can relate mm-hmm. to that.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, definitely. I myself, my mother had dementia mm-hmm. the last years of her life.
Yep.
I have an actress, you know, who lost a parent to Alzheimer's. You know, it is. And I have a cast where, you know, I'm one of the youngest.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You know,
makes sense.
At 70. Yep. Yeah. And so it is. It's something that everyone can relate to. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we all need to think about because yeah. it's there.
The one of the things in just the bit that I read of the script that I got from it right away was mm-hmm. Such a great opportunity this play is of not only some empathy and some understanding for the individuals going through this, mm-hmm. but the topic being talked about and in raised voices like this, not hushed or not afraid
yes,
to talk about.
Exactly.
There's a lot of our society has done a really good job. I think we don't do this enough of actually give credit to society sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think we've done a really good job of we talk about mental health more now.
Yes.
We're talking about it in raised voices. We're all okay with it. It's not a taboo
oh, yes.
subject.
No.
But now that that's done, we still got a lot of work to do on these things. And mm-hmm. there's the kind of gray areas or the subcategories of this. And
yes.
one of them that isn't really is well known, but I don't think is thought of in this under this umbrella is dementia and mental and, mm-hmm. and Alzheimer's, which are diseases.
Yes, they are.
Similar to depression and other things that mm-hmm. affect the
right.
brain.
Exactly.
We almost put them to side categories, and they deserve their own respect in their own category. Don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. But the more we talk about mental health and everything, I think we need to get better about just talking about topics. Just even
yes.
even regardless of what is said in those conversations, just talking about them.
Yeah.
We take away a lot of the taboo, a lot of the fear of this stuff.
Yeah. And these things have been around forever.
Right.
We just yeah. didn't have a name to them.
Exactly.
They were called something
right.
else. It's like autism. Mm-hmm. It's been here. It's
yep.
nothing new.
Yep. Right. Well, you go back to the original Don Quixote, the novel.
Yes.
And obviously he's suffering from something.
Yeah. Something,
he's having
yes.
hallucinations. So it's
yes.
like, yeah. And now we would be able to diagnose, you know, whatever it is he had. But
right.
that's exactly what they were kind of dealing with even back in the 1500s. So.
Exactly. And we're actually fortunate, you know, now because there are labels, as you were, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
right.
there are clues.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
we do have the research still, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know. Don't
right.
get me started.
Right.
But because we have the research and because we're learning more about it, science is learning more about how our brains work because, boy, I tell you, you know, I think there's too much there for any of us to totally comprehend.
Oh, yeah. absolutely.
Yeah. But we're learning more and more all the time.
Yeah.
And the more we learn, the more we can help people who need the help.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about it.
Yes.
And to that, actually, this play is going to be a really good outreach program
right.
for all of us. We'll talk about that later when we talk about ticket prices and,
sure.
and everything.
Yeah.
But there is, we have the Tuesday afternoon, Sunday afternoon. See? Sorry.
starting already.
Oh, boy.
She's
yeah,
just trying to
already.
Give us examples.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What day is it today?
I told you she was a good actor. I told you.
Sunday's matinee. We'll actually have we're going to have a mental health care official or mm-hmm. professional from the Point area come in after the play, and we are going to hold a Q&A
nice.
Discussion period.
Wow.
About, yeah, it's one of those plays that really I think people will want to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
And my producer will be there as well as this health official. I will be there, and we're going to invite any of the actors that care to, and we're just putting off strike for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we have been assured by my tech director that will not be a problem.
Okay.
So yeah,
that's...
so it's opening up discussion, and mm-hmm. we're reflecting a lot of that in the tickets and things that we're offering, as I said, and we'll get to that later.
I think that's beautiful, Susan. I think mm-hmm. that's above and beyond, offering that, having that. And one of the other things that I wanted to touch on with this, along with it being an open conversation, is the mm-hmm. opportunity it gives people to have the conversation. Mm-hmm. To even so many, especially the population that this is affecting currently and everything, are still from a generation that mm-hmm. may want to do that, but don't have the playbook of how do I talk about things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think of a good intended wanting to be better about that and with their mm-hmm. kids and some of those things. But right. as far as for themselves, how do I even jump into this topic? How do I even talk about mm-hmm. this or something? Here we go. There you go. Is not only the yeah. play itself is that, but having this outreach afterwards, like just oh, kudos. Yeah. That's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
That's
I
really
mean, with
nice.
My own mother, none of us in the family ever just sat down and talked about, you know, this is happening.
Right.
We know this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, you know, there were situations, you know, where the hardest was at a holiday with family gathering, and she was looking for her brother, my mm-hmm. uncle, who had died several years previously, and we had to tell her all over again that he was gone.
Right.
And to watch her have to grieve freshly
yeah.
all over again. And then we still didn't talk about it, the rest of us afterward.
Wow.
We just felt it, dealt with it, and passed on.
Mm-hmm.
I think I appreciate you sharing that because I yep. think a lot of us were immediately pulled to our own situations like
mm-hmm.
that.
Yep.
I don't know if there will ever be a person on this planet that'll love me like my Nana did. Mm-hmm. The way that she felt
You've
about me
about
and everything.
You've talked about her many, many times.
And the last time I saw her, she called me Anthony. My dad, my parents, youngest child, my their youngest child, my Nana mm-hmm. Papa's youngest yeah. child that died when he was like 3. And,
oh, gosh. Yeah.
And I remember wondering, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, do I correct her? Do I, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And I didn't. Yeah. And mm-hmm. and it's one of the few times in life where I actually give myself a high five. Because
yeah.
I actually did the right thing for once in that
yes.
situation. Now, to each their own, and I wouldn't judge anything, but you brought up the topic of the content in this play and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it, again, brought me back to that moment. And
yeah.
what you do in those situations. And one of the things that I think is strong in this play is it's not necessarily telling people what to do.
No.
It's helping people. It's
yeah.
helping people know that there are options, there are ideas, that they're not alone in this subject matter. As caregivers,
right.
it's so vital to have that known to people.
Yes.
And reminded of that.
Yeah. And there are two characters in the play who are family members trying to deal with this. You've
right.
got Alice as her husband, Clark, who is not suffering, but he comes and sees her, and he gets torn apart, you know, by watching her memory fade
mm-hmm.
every time he
yeah.
comes. You've got Sam, Don's son, who puts his dad in the home because he can't take care of himself anymore,
right.
and Sam's got his own problems and can't take care of him. And yet his whole idea is, I want to see my dad get better.
Ooh.
Yes. And so he has to come to the realization,
mm-hmm.
you know, one way or another. Yeah. You know, and Marta, who is in charge of the clinic, tries to tell him this is not going to get better.
You don't, yeah.
They don't get better.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that role kind of tears your heart out,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's so hard. He has a line where he says, I just want my dad back.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's mm-hmm. when our producer, Joe Nowinski, was watching a rehearsal last week, and that's when he had to leave the room. He was just sobbing.
Oh,
you know, and his dad's fine.
Right.
But
he's imagining, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
He's what you know, and this is what great art does, right? What are the things
mm-hmm.
it does? It entertains, of course. That's one
yeah.
of the main things it does. It tells
is.
A story.
Mm-hmm.
But it also shines a light. Mm-hmm. The best art shines a light on some part of the human condition.
Yeah.
And that
mm-hmm.
is, and that's exactly what this is doing, which
yeah.
is what makes it, you know, great art.
Yeah. I have, I'm just going to, just a little bit, I have some
mm-hmm.
my director's notes. I worked very hard on them.
Yes.
But just in this, because I've done a little research. And it says about 5 to 8% of all people over 65 have some form of dementia. And this number doubles every 5 years above 65.
Mm-hmm.
About 1 in 9 people age 65 or over in the U.S. has Alzheimer's. That's one case every 3.2 seconds.
Wow.
I didn't know any of those numbers, and none of them
I
are
didn't
that
either until I looked it up.
Oh, really? You know?
Yeah.
That's this. the hard-hitting part of that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that, Susan, and looking that up. But it also hopefully creates more of an understanding of why this topic is so important, why this mm-hmm. play is so important. Like all great art, and especially great plays, all the things we've been talking about, along with some laughs, some great moments.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There are.
It's one of those ones where the play, especially the reviews that I've read of this one and everything, it's such a does such a great balance of that, of getting your heart and the funny bone, of mm-hmm. being able to really do both. Want to make mm-hmm. sure that people understand going into this show. It is going to be a bit emotional, but it's also going to be, you know, you're going to enjoy it.
Oh, God,
right.
Yes.
You've got a great cast and some
Thank
really
you.
Fun people that know how to do this kind of art, know how to
yes.
do these kind of
yes.
walk these lines.
I mean,
and you have a director who's tailor-made for it.
Memory lapses amongst the other residents are funny.
Yeah,
you know, quite are very funny. I mean, let's face it. And having a man attack cardboard cutout pilgrims with a sock flail, yelling infidels, or, you know, jousting with a mop handle in a wheelchair against a vending machine, and we have that's glowing with red lights, and everybody thinks it's a giant. You know, those are really fun.
Yes,
we have a duel. We've got a joust. We've got, you know, flinging things. And yet he's got a speech about what his dulcinea, what his paramour means to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it is. We have Jimmy's very funny. You know,
yeah.
It's the whole Night of Mirrors thing starts out to be very funny. And doesn't get serious until later on.
Hmm.
One of the things that I think is the beauty of art and the beauty of theater is what you were touching on again, Seth, about the reflection, the mirror that it is to mm-hmm. society.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I don't know, care where you land on anything in today's day and age. Boy, is this a great idea of or a great showing of how you can laugh now, cry later, or cry mm-hmm. now, laugh later,
Peter,
or
yes.
whatever it is
yeah,
that we
yeah.
got to do in life in this day and age.
We sure do, yeah.
In so many ways, it's a great yeah. example of that. I understand with a lot of the movements and a lot of the things that have gone on, I'm a big fan of and a big supporter of.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I worry about getting lost in the shuffle is the idea of being able to laugh at ourselves. And being able
yes.
to make fun of ourselves and find the
yes.
funny. Find the funny in the mundane. Find the funny in the
yeah.
insanity that is life, the entropy that is life.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, it's one of the reasons I'm actually still here,
yeah.
is being able
yeah.
to laugh at the
exactly.
absurdity of
yeah.
my own life sometimes and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I
exactly.
know I'm not alone on that one.
Not at all.
I've got this tattoo on me that I've had since I was 18. It's the theater masks.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know me for 2 seconds, you know I want to act, and I've wanted to do it since I was 7. I don't know if I've told anybody that before.
I think I've heard it a time.
And
or two.
Drink. But it personally, what it really has always meant to me is that mantra, laugh now, cry later.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big part of where those masks come from and
mm-hmm.
everything. That's
yes.
to me, that's
yeah.
something that this play really encompasses so well. You are
yeah.
going to laugh at those moments.
Oh, yes.
While also learning in those moments, while also
yes.
feeling in those moments, and hopefully having some empathy for individuals that are in this situation
mm-hmm.
or that you've known that are in this situation, and maybe even... Like, just in the little bit that I watched or I've read of this or have seen on
mm-hmm.
when it comes to subject matters like this,
yeah.
I feel like, I got to not only think about my Nana again, but have a little more understanding of what she was going through, which
mm-hmm.
not only
yeah.
made me remember her and have some great memories of her, but made me somehow respect her even more, something
wow.
I never thought could be possible.
Yeah.
But I found myself even respecting her more after reading some of the scenes
yeah.
and actually got me to go back, and I know they're two very different subject matters, but one of my favorite movies of all time is The Fisher King.
Oh, and gosh, yes.
Got me to go back, watch
yeah.
some of that,
mm-hmm.
and kind of re-looking at some of these scenes and some of the stuff that's going
exactly.
on and the content that they're talking about.
Right. And there are some great relationships in the play, mm-hmm. to not just between, you know, the relatives,
mm-hmm.
but between Don and Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have a young actress playing Sancho, mm-hmm. and she's new. That she's never had a role
mm-hmm.
this size before, and she hadn't
mm-hmm.
been in that many plays before. But she had something at auditions, and so I cast her, and it's been so much fun watching her grow, you know, but also watching she and Chris Sands, who plays Dawn, grow together,
mm.
you know,
wow.
and have this relationship that really is quite close.
It's one of the cooler things to see.
When you're in a part
of a play. I can only imagine as a director getting to see something like that. The reward that that is.
It is. I love it. I love to see, you know, people. I just love to help people become better actors.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think I did that with
you. Oh, yeah, you have. Oh, yeah, you have.
You said that she can take all the credit for that. Yes.
I've always given her credit in this regard because you brought that up and you brought me back to auditioning for Rainmaker. At the time, all I'd ever been given is like villain roles and bad guys and a lot of these things. I'd never played anything close to a romantic lead or anything. You cast me in that, and the rest of my career, I've been actually doing more of those roles than I have anything else. It set me on a whole different path as an actor and gave me something that I wanted since I was a kid going into this field.
Sure.
Not to be typed and to be able to do anything.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I think most actors would want.
Yeah.
But
you are freaky scary. So I've been with him on stage in Dark of the Moon. Freaky scary.
A little bit of a wheelhouse for me.
Yes. He scared the pants off of me in this scene we had together. But.
Nice. I'd like the audience to always like to get into the rehearsal process a little bit, just so the audience can know a little bit of what it's like for the cast and have some understanding of that, but also hopefully encourage them to maybe come on down. Because you find out, hey, it's not that hard. It's not that, it doesn't take that much. And everybody can be a part of it.
Seems a lot more intimidating than it is.
I think so.
Yeah, and partially it's because with community theater, you know, you have cold readings.
Yeah.
And it's really hard if you know, are someone, you don't have a lot of experience, so you haven't read the script, and then you try and come and audition. And that's always, you know, bad news.
Yeah.
That's why auditions are so darn hard. If you've at least read the script and have an idea of the roles that you'd fit and are interested in, and you know, then it's a little better, a little easier. But because it's cold, at least me as a director, I always give people the benefit of the doubt, and I give them a chance to read numerous times, you know, so that, and some will get better each time they read, and that's where I can see, okay, I can work with someone like this. You know, if they get a little better, and sometimes they just watch other people, you know, and just sort of, okay, I can do that too.
You know. She ain't kidding, everybody. One of the worst auditions I think I've ever given is one of the most important ones I've ever done. It was for Baskerville. I wanted that part so darn
bad.
You
did.
And I was sick, and I went into it, and I've got a director that I've auditioned for a dozen times. It should be fine. I got so nervous, and I was so in my own head. And you saw things that I didn't see in that audition, and she's very good at that. And to be fair, we have a lot of great local directors that do that. I don't want you to, anybody out there thinking that wants to try out for plays that Susan's an anomaly. She's incredibly special. Yes. Incredibly unique.
She's way better than anyone.
Even my husband. Don't tell Michael that.
Right. But I like to think that our especially our Central Wisconsin theater families and groups and everything are really good at seeing this and seeing things that you may not even see in yourself. And so another encouragement to get on down there, be a part of your local theater wherever you're listening to us. When it comes to the rehearsals, how often were you guys rehearsing? How long have you been rehearsing?
Okay, well, we started, let me see, I had auditions on the 5th of May. And so we started the week after, you know, read through and blocking and everything. So it's been, and we rehearse Monday through Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30.
Yeah.
You know, if last night, they were so thrilled. They looked at me. I said, 8 o'clock. Okay, go home. I went, what? I said, yeah.
That's always a treat.
Well, it's mandatory off book this week, you know.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
But this was the second time. Monday was Act 1 and Wednesday was Act 1. Tuesday's Act 2. Tonight is Act 2. So they already had the really rip the Band-Aid off night on Monday.
Yep.
So Wednesday was just much better. We had a couple of hiccups. We did run the giant, you know, jousting scene because that's action movement.
Yes.
That's music and it's sound effects.
Yeah.
And so and everything
timing.
Has and plus the lines. Yeah, everything has to happen exactly.
Yep.
In one order only for it to really pull off.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, so I said, you know, I'm not going to overwork them
because
we still have 2 more weeks. We still have all next week before even load in.
Right.
You know, and so I said, no, go home.
Well, and forgive me if this is if I don't word this right or anything, but with a bit of an older cast and everything, you probably want to pace this, be smart where you're able to.
Exactly. And especially some of them still work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, Chris Sands is retired, but he drives in from Wausau.
Mm.
So, yeah, you want to
so
let him.
So he gets
him
back late, in other words.
Plus,
yeah.
This is his first year in Wisconsin. He's from California.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So he hasn't been used to the weather, let me tell you.
It's something else to keep in mind if you haven't done this before and you want to audition. Another one of these things that our community theaters work with actors a lot. Mm-hmm. Now there is a set schedule, of course, and rehearsal time. Mm-hmm. But as far as the personal touch of a lot of this is really hands on and very case by case and stuff. Just to, anybody ever thinking about I don't want anybody to ever not try out for a play for any reason. There's only reasons to do this. I don't think there's a single reason not to. And whatever you're telling yourself of reasons there aren't to, we're trying to encourage you to go ahead and still do this.
Yeah,
and be
if it's something you really want to try, then go for it. Always. Life's too short.
Yeah. Before we let you go, I want to get into the details of the show, and you mentioned the outreach. I want to touch on that as well.
Or
you kind of talked about it already a little bit.
Okay.
But
well, yes, we have.
Rehash it a little.
We have. Let me see. I suppose I should just give you the cast names, mention us.
You know, the actor's going to remember the other
actors. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, they may not remember what day it is, but they'll remember that wasn't
exactly
mentioned. Christopher Sands is playing Don Quintero. Peter Monk is playing Sam. Marta is played by Susan Elant. Sandy has been played by Melinda Rozek. Jimmy is Austin Slack. Alice is Anna Fehring. Doris is Maxine Hogan. Eddie is Pat Hogan. So I have a husband and wife doing there.
That was fun,
picking at each other on the sofa, which is interesting. Clark is Tom Russell. And Dr. Carrasco is Wendy Minch. So I have, it's a good cast. Mm-hmm. It's a fun cast. We laugh a lot, especially since, like I said, half of us are of an age. So if there's some kind of slip up the tongue or anything, or like me going, well, wait a minute, what night are we on? Everyone's going, okay, get out, quick,
But real method actor.
But we're enjoying ourselves very much, and they're working very hard. Mm. Most of them, because this is an original manuscript, the scripts are quite large, so they have been aching to get those out of their hands.
Oh, I'm sure, yes.
Yes, many were off book last week.
Get out of here.
Yes, please, I can't do anything with this huge floppy thing. So, no, we're enjoying it, and I'm enjoying it immensely, really. Good. Okay, and it's not even a farce, but I'm having a good time.
For those who know Susan, it's a preferred kind of play.
It tells you it's a good play, good script.
Shakespeare and farces.
And I have plenty of those. This is a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
Okay, tickets. Tickets are $15 for adults, $12 for seniors, $10 for kids, $7 for vets. Now, on top of that, free tickets for healthcare workers that come in with their IDs.
Wow.
Any healthcare worker in any field.
That's awesome.
I want to stress that.
Nice.
Also, any health and human services is the same thing with your ID. And if you work with the elderly, you and a guest can come in free.
Wow.
We want people to... We want butts in seats, but they have done this. The theater group has done so well this year with their previous shows that they said we can afford to give back to our community.
Amazing.
And this is the perfect show to do that.
Outreach.
With.
Oh goodness!
Right, so and there cool. and there are $5 student rush. Any student with an ID, not just high school or college, but I say med student or school, or if you have a student ID,
that's all you need.
$5 student rush.
Cool. Okay. Wow, that's above and beyond all of that.
It is. It really is. It's exciting.
It's very exciting. Yes, wow.
And that's a credit to, as well, the community. The community is supporting their theater and them being doing well enough to be able to do things like that.
Yes, and credit to CWACT has always had a philosophy in their whole being of community service. Mm. That theater is community service.
Right.
So really, now they're extending that.
Community theater. Yes. That's why it's not a production company or anything like that. It's community theater. And that, for me, should be definitely part of it.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. So let me give you the dates. So again, so my producer says you didn't give him the date, Susan. we open May 8th. And that is, May 8th at 7 p.m., May 9th at 7, May 10th at 7. And then May 11th is the Sunday, 2 p.m. And then with the talk back afterwards.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's just one weekend.
Certainly with that matinee, I encourage people to make some time afterwards to be a part of that.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah,
really
I think it's I'm excited.
I'm glad to hear that, and always glad to talk with you, Susan. We can't thank you enough for not only the time today, but putting so much into this community, putting so much into this play, and everything you've done over the years.
Thank you.
As always, you did too good of a job, so you're going to have to come back.
Oh, yeah. We'll find, I'm sure we'll find reasons to get her back.
Well, I think in our pregame, we already came up with some, so yeah, we're definitely bringing her back. And thank you again. Please carry on from us here to the cast. Break a leg. Have a great run.
I will.
We're hoping
to
be able to take these shows in, and we will meet you everybody.
Yeah. To me, this isn't a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, it's my avocation.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't able to make a vocation of it the way I wanted to, but it's been a very strong avocation.
I think you've done pretty well either way.
Thanks.
Right? Yes, you have. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And selfishly, we're thankful to have you around here.
Yes, we are.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm thankful that I have two theaters that I can participate in.
Right on.
You
know? Find out about one of them, CWAC.org. That's the best segue I had. CWAC.org is where you can get your tickets and find out more. Encourage you to make plans. Again, the show premieres May 8th. Make plans and get your tickets and get on over there, CWAC.org. And thank you again to everybody for listening. We appreciate the best listeners in radio hanging out with us. We'll be back with another Director's Playhouse coming up for you right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to WFHR's Director's Playhouse. Seth and James hanging out with you. We thought a fun tag end of this show would be something that Seth and I get into on another side, though. We've talked a number of times, Seth, about actors who, turn down roles that they know that they, you know, later regretted.
Right.
I think famously Will Smith turning down Neo is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the other side of that? When actors, that gut instinct tells them, hey, this isn't going to be end well. this might hurt my career.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't say yes to everything.
Yeah, right.
Jude Law. No, I love Jude Law.
No,
I'm a big fan.
He's great. He's had a very late career resurgence. But it's a great point. You know, we're looking at, you know, what, because we have seen this where certain actors take certain roles and it does. It really can hurt your career. And what were the near misses? You know, I'll pass on that one. And it turned out to be a good thing, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it even worked out for the actor that took on the role.
That's true.
The movie didn't go very well.
Yeah, exactly.
I use Jude Law as an example because it's actually something that I've heard teachers talk about in acting classes. And where he, early on in his career, got that big break and had an agent in his ear who was telling him to say yes to everything. And that really kind of like saturated the market with Jude Law. So you kind of don't see him for a little while there. Now, thankfully, and because of his skill and his willpower, you know, he pushed through and he's still around and everything. But it could have ended differently. It has for a lot of other actors.
Right.
You may not realize that, but it has. think of Eddie Flash in the Pan, if you will. An actor who, there's a number of actors right now that I think are in danger of that if they weren't to play it right. The gentleman from Twisters, the guy.
Now I can't remember his name.
Yes. Oh, dang it.
Did that prove our point? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. You know what I want to do is I keep wanting to say Scott Eastwood, and that's not who it is.
No.
Is it
Dempsey?
No, it is Glenn Powell.
Powell, that's
Glenn
it.
Powell.
Glenn Powell, okay.
Glenn Powell, we're leaving that in.
We're
leaving all that in. Glenn Powell is a rising star. He from Top Gun to Twisters to all that, he's been really smart about taking roles that he likes and also that he thinks can help grow him as an actor. He's doing a Hulu TV show and stuff.
Oh,
like, you don't usually go to TV, but it's a whole new world now with all that stuff.
Right.
So let's look at some of the more famous situations where an actor turned down a role and it worked out for him, like Margaret Robbie in Ghost in the Shell. Scarlett Johansson ended up taking the lead and got tons of backlash for portraying what was originally an Asian character.
Right.
Emma Stone ran into this a little bit with a movie she did a while back. Now, that worked, actually blew up in people's faces because it turned out Emma Stone actually is a percentage and everything.
Right.
But this one didn't go well for Scarlett Johansson.
No.
Hasn't also hurt her career.
To be fair, it has not, because she is, the other thing too for that one is she was already established at that point. Scarlett Johansson, I mean.
True. Yes.
Margot Robbie was still up and comer.
Yeah.
And that might have caused some issues for her. Johansson can weather the storm.
Right.
Maybe not Robbie.
Yeah. Zendaya, this is an interesting one. Zendaya, ooh, another up-and-coming great actor, great actor. Aaliyah, the princess of R&B, she wisely dropped out, but that was mainly because Aaliyah's family didn't support the movie.
Oh, now,
there's a one where that movie, if that movie had become a bestseller, the actor who played Aaliyah got nominated for an Oscar. I still think that's a good call.
Yeah,
because you got to, the other part of this is not just your career and having a career and keeping a career, but your PR and how people perceive you off the field.
Yes.
It may not feel like a big deal, but man, it is part of what gets people to come to movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, wild as it is for people like me to think of that, like that would make me see a movie or not see a movie. Mm-hmm. It does. And it might even play more of a part than I realize in my own brain.
Right. And it gives her, it shows that she has a lot of awareness about with what roles she is willing to play and not. And I gotta say, she has been just super smart with the roles she has. I mean, she's been really hammering it, man.
Speaking of Emma Stone or Kristen Dunst or anybody else, I've loved every actress that has played Mary Jane. Yeah. I think they have nailed that character every single time, and we never talk about it.
No.
But Zendaya is by far away my favorite.
Yeah, right.
Especially the way they revealed it at the end of the
that
first
was fun.
One.
Oh, I
so
love
good.
That.
It was so good.
It was a nice little twist.
Their chemistry is fantastic,
yes,
too. Jordan Peele, one of the most sought-after directors in all of the world right now. And a great actor, a hilarious human being.
Yes.
The emoji movie. He turned down the poop emoji. Which
I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Which ultimately was taken by Patrick Stewart. being offered the part was one of the reasons Peele decided to focus on directing and go that route.
Wow. So that kind of changed the course of his career at that point.
You can make the argument. Changed the course of Hollywood. Yes. Like the first one of his.
Right.
There is horror movies are in a stall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just nothing new going
same
on
old,
there.
Same old, right?
And everybody just keeps on leaning into blood and gore and guts and everything. With his movies, it becomes a modern Hitchcock tale. Mm-hmm. It's more about suspense and all that. And oh my God, his movies are good.
Yes.
And which has set off a whole new thing, which right now you're seeing with Sinners, with the popularity and the success of the movie Sinners, Ryan
Coogler.
Which
is really remarkable.
Ryan Coogler, who goes from superhero movies to go do suspense and horror.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Peele, I'm not trying to be a prisoner of the moment or say that he changed the complete game or projection of Hollywood for 20, 30 years, but he definitely has a root in that, a branch in that tree that sent him in a different direction.
Especially for minority directors. When's the last time we had, not talking about parody like Scary Movie or anything like that, Black creators doing horror was probably in the 70s, Blackula and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Those are the exploitation films. And that has, since then, it's been like nothing. And then he kind of brought it up, and now he's bringing more people in with him, and it's really cool to see.
Crazy to think about that, if he had taken that role and what might have been different. Also, you turn down that role, and you're like, I ain't playing the poop emoji.
Yeah, yeah.
I ain't doing that, man, nothing like that. Then you find out like later, like, wait a minute, Sir Patrick Stewart took it, but I turned it down? But that guy, who's literally royalty.
And, he can get away with anything, actually.
True.
Patrick Stewart at this point can
get
away with
anything. I just don't know how, if that was me, I'd be like, oh, I feel like a little bit, almost like a little like a joke. Almost
right.
A little bit like, oh, if he could do it. Emma Stone, who we brought up earlier, turned down Wonder Woman 1984. The original was such a hit, you'd think it had been a safe bet. But Emma was not was smart not to accept the part of Cheetah that went to Kristen Wiig. Now, I wonder, though, if the movie had been more successful and there had been a better job. I love Kristen Wiig. I was I was proud of the casting and her taking the change in direction as an actor. But it just didn't hit.
Yep.
And the movie suffered because of it. I also... When you have a Pedro Pascal, it's got to be a better villain. The main villain they chose couldn't have been more unmovie friendly.
Right.
You know, like in the comics, it works really good, that character.
Sure.
But I don't feel like it works very good on screen, even though it's good. It tells you something when Pedro Pascal couldn't make that character work.
I mean, as good an actor as he is, that is telling you something.
Drew Barrymore turned down Showgirls. This one's become kind of a cult classic, but it did hurt Elizabeth Berkley's career.
It killed it. I mean, if you want like exhibit A of taking a role, and which is, and to be fair to Elizabeth Berkley, she did it for because she wanted to break out, get away from the Saved by the Bell thing like that. I get that, but it did. It really ruined her career. You can see interviews with her since then. She's like, I wanted to do it because I'm a dancer. She wanted to dance. All these things. There were good reasons for taking the part. But yikes.
I don't blame her, and I agree with everything you said. This is one of those ones where a athlete is too hurt to go out on the field, and the coach has to be the person like, no, I'm sorry, man, you can't go out there.
Yep.
Casting directors have to be like, no, I'm sorry, you are not. But instead they leaned on, ooh, we can get the Saved by the Bell girl in a racy role.
Right.
And they went for cheap headlines and stuff and made a bad movie.
Yeah.
And put an actor who didn't deserve to be in that spot, a young actor that didn't deserve to be in that spot. And
right.
She's a grown woman. She made her own choices. Mm-hmm. But again, the coach has to make the decision sometimes of, hey, you are not ready for the
And it was totally unfair, too, for her, because look at all the other people that were in the movie. It did not affect them at all, even though they did ridiculous 100%.
Performances. 100%. A couple of big names,
too. I mean, Gina Gershon never gets mentioned about it. And she, you know, Kyle MacLachlan in that one.
Oh, my God.
That ridiculous scene. I'm not going to mention what it is, but it's just so silly. And again, nothing happened to him.
Well, and on the other side of this, too, around the same time, you've got Showgirls with Demi, or no, the Demi Moore movie.
Oh, Striptease.
Striptease.
Yeah.
With Burt Reynolds and her. And that gets all this, like, critical success and how daring of Demi to do this and stuff.
And the complete flip.
Which is really insulting.
Yeah.
To not just these actors, but moviegoers.
Smart move by Drew Barrymore there.
Yeah.
Not to take that one.
Yeah. Although, Drew, in any kind of different type of role, I would have liked to have seen. I don't think she's acting anymore.
Yeah.
But not so much her as a showgirl.
Mm-hmm.
Just her in something very different than what we've normally
seen her in. Especially at the time, yeah.
Because again, another one of these actors, we never got to see the range of their talent.
No, not really.
She never got a chance to completely do some of the stuff she could have. One of my famous examples of this is Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer famously turned down Batman and Robin, went to George Clooney.
Mm-hmm.
Movie wasn't exactly a success.
That was actually a smart move on him, on Val's part. Of course, he had reasons for doing it. You've mentioned those before because he had other projects that he wanted to do. And that was, but still, smart move on
his Robin part. Williams was originally cast as the Riddler, but was unable to do it because of scheduling. I believe he was doing Being Human or something like that at the time. One of my favorite movies of his. He plays four different roles in it and everything. It's great. Val Kilmer, the thing nobody talks about this that I feel like I'm one of the few people championing, and this is fact. Val Kilmer turned down this role because he got the opportunity to do one movie, Batman and Robin, and you know, make more money than he knew he'd ever seen.
He would have made up,
Or he could work in The Ghost in the Darkness with Michael Douglas. Mm-hmm. He could do The Island of Dr. Monroe with Marlon Brando and do Heat with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. He chose that, not for the money, because again, he made less in those three movies than he would have made for one day on the set of Batman and Robin.
Right.
But he wanted to get better as an actor. And he knew if he worked with those actors, that's how you get better, working with better actors.
Right.
And so he did the right thing.
He did, even though, I mean, there's no question. Heat is a classic, you know, especially in heist movie circles. It's a classic.
It's an
excellent
movie.
It's
a perfect movie.
Ghost in the Darkness, that is a fine movie. You know, good performances. Yeah, Dr. Moreau is not good, and there's lots of reasons for that. But still, I mean, the fact that he got to do those two other ones and really kind of solidify his legacy in that sense, absolutely.
It's kind of funny where when this works out so well for an actor in their legacy.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of cool to see now.
Right.
There's Jim Carrey in Evan Almighty, another famous one. Of course, it wouldn't have been called Evan Almighty if Jim had done it,
since
it would have been a sequel to Bruce Almighty.
Exactly. It would have been Bruce Almighty 2 or whatever,
But instead, the focus shifted to Steve Carell's character. The movie bombed. Luckily for Steve, didn't really hurt him. He had The Office. He was already a few years into The Office
at the time.
So it was kind of almost like... not to say it helped or hurt. It was just kind of like not even a speed bump, just kind of another thing.
No, and it's funny. That movie has become sort of a cult classic, too, even more than Bruce Almighty has been. The Evan Almighty one has kind of gotten its own following.
Well, and again, this also gave him the opportunity. Okay, they don't want me in comedies right now because I got a little bit of a black eye. I'm going to do drama, and I'm going to do Foxcatcher and get nominated for an Oscar.
Be amazing, right?
like just Steve Carell, man. Yeah. He's great.
So much talent.
And we wrap up with Hugh Jackman and Anne Hathaway and Cats. I don't know if we got to get into this one. I feel like no explanation is really that necessary.
I think we all take a big sigh of relief for that one. Yes, although for the way Hugh Jackman is, no. It's. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that both of them were, you know, Les Mis, which is I've only been able to see that movie once because it's so emotional and it just kills me every time I've seen it. Especially Anne Hathaway does a fantastic, and of course Hugh Jackman.
She's so dang good.
She is good in that. And then Hugh Jackman, of course, is an amazing all around performer and entertainer. And, you know, you can say what you want about Mr. Mr. Russell Crowe. But other than that, that is amazing. But the idea of them having going and doing Cats, oh, so smart. You guys are brilliant.
I don't know how. I want to be in on the selling of that session. Did it involve them just writing down a number in like that scene where they just pass a piece of paper back and forth?
Yeah.
Like, as far as every member of that cast, is that how that went as far as getting them to do that movie?
I can't even think of the names in that, except for James Corden. I mean, he had his other issues that kind of destroyed his career. But being in Cats didn't help. Did not help. So.
Taylor Swift, Idris Elba, Dame Judi Dench, Jennifer Hudson, Rebel Wilson, Sir Ian McKellen. How did you convince Sir Ian McKellen like to do this? Like, hey, you haven't had any black eyes in your career. How about one?
How about one now?
Everybody needs one.
Come on, Ian, Sir Ian.
This movie had Taylor Swift and it couldn't succeed.
That's saying something. And to be fair to the actors and stuff, the script was terrible, but it was a lot of the post-production that really sank that ship. But
you can find the complete article at BuzzFeed.com. This was a lot of fun, Seth.
Yeah, it was.
We'll have another episode of Director's Playhouse coming up for you real soon, everybody. Buy local, support our shows, and spread the word of them. And we'll talk to you sooner than later right here.